Hello, everyone. It's me, David Chen. I'm here with Joey Napping. We just watched Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. And we got back from the theater, and I thought for the Patreon at patreon.com/DaveChen, we'd put together some initial reactions. This will probably be pretty brief because we are going to attempt to not spoil anything at all. And when I say not spoil anything, I mean, like, usually what I do is I say, hey, let's talk about stuff that's been in the trailer. The trailers do not give away what the premise of the movie, like they don't give away like who the bad guy is or what they're trying to do or whatever. And so there's very little we can actually say in this recording about what actually happens in the movie. So we're going to just use this opportunity to do some initial reactions and what we thought about it. Now, some context. I am an enormous fan of the Mission Impossible franchise, as are you. I think we went to go see Fallout 5 times in theaters, if I recall correctly.
That is how I recall it, yes.
Yeah. I've seen the whole, like, all the movies all the way through probably, you know, 3-4 times.
Whew, even number two.
Yeah. I remember number two being, like, one of the first DVDs I bought. It was, like, a nice two-disc set that had tons of special features, so I've watched that movie a bunch of times.
For me, number two was number two.
I remember seeing Mission Impossible 2 with my brother in the theater. And, you know, it's been almost 30 years. I guess it's been like 25 years since then. You know, it's been like...
It came out around 2000, right?
I think 1997, I want to say. 1999, maybe.
That's been 25-ish years, yeah.
But, and I got to go see Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning with him tonight, and that was very special because we'd seen two in theaters decades ago and got to see it again tonight. So I say all this to say I am an enormous fan of this franchise, and also I've been looking forward to this movie for a long time. Like, we loved Fallout so much. The idea that they're making another one was so exciting. The idea that it's going to be two parts is so exciting. The idea that it was... I think the most expensive movie that's ever been made was very exciting.
Oh, I did not know that.
I think it has like a budget of around $390 million or something along those lines, primarily because it has started and stopped production so many times due to COVID and other things. So I was super, super psyched for this movie. And I'll just say, in terms of expectations, what I was hoping for is that it would be as good as Fallout. If it was as good as Fallout, I'd be like... Amazing.
Well,
like,
we had a different bonus episode for Patreon where we talked about your hopes, and I tried to soften them since you loved Fallout so much. Like, what would you accept? And you were like, okay, well, if it was like better than Mission Impossible, the original, but, you know, like not quite as good as Fallout, that would still be acceptable. And I kind of wanted to like bite my fist and because that just still felt like an unreachable bar.
Yeah. Okay. So,
so for you, David Chen, was that bar reached?
I don't think so. My big reaction to Dead Reckoning Part 1 is that, so again, I'm going to share my reaction. I'm not going to talk about what the plot of the movie is. We're going to share my reaction to it. So you have been warned. But I didn't love it. I thought some of the action scenes, some of the set pieces were really great. The centerpiece of the movie has been in the trailers, is on the poster of the movie. There's been a featurette released about it many months ago. That was awesome. Watching that in a theater full of people, when Tom Cruise jumps off the ledge with a motorbike...
Everyone just held their breath.
Everyone was just like, there was literally a guy who took a phone call next to my brother. I don't know if you saw that.
No.
Some guy had a phone ring and took a call next to my brother. And if it had happened more than once, I would have been like, shut that thing off. Like, I would have said something.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But anyway, point being, like, this was a rowdy crowd and people were making noise. And when Tom Cruise went off the ledge, like drove his motorcycle off the thing, everyone shut the fuck up. And it was like an amazing moment to be in the theater when that happened. So I say all that to say, like, there's a lot of like cool things about the movie. It's not like a bad, I don't think it's a bad movie at all. Did I love it though? No, I didn't. I didn't think it was as good as Fallout. Mission Impossible Fallout, I was never bored when watching Mission Impossible Fallout.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. I don't want to cut you off. I get that you didn't love it as much as the movie you loved the most.
Yeah.
But like, is it, give the people some hope, you know, like, should they even see it? Like, can you help calibrate? Absolutely.
I just gave some reasons why it's good. You know, I said some of the action scenes are like, some of the set pieces are very inventive.
Right, but like in the catalog, maybe you don't even know yet because you're still processing, but like, is it a good sit? Is it worth seeing? Is it... From your perspective,
I think so, because you know what they really want to do with these movies is they want to show you something you haven't seen before. They really try to make sure Tom Cruise is actually doing the stuff that he's shown doing to some degree, and it has all that. And if that's what you're looking for, I think you'll have a good time. But I'm very ambivalent about it, as you can probably hear. One of the reasons is because this is the longest Mission Impossible movie that's ever been made. I think it's over 2.5 hours long. And I don't think it justifies that runtime. Like, if you're going to be that long, it's like the movie should be the best, in my opinion. Like, you're demanding more time. So I think it should be. And there is just so much of this movie that is exposition. It's just so much exposition that's like kind of not nonsensical and occasionally silly. And so for that reason, I'm like, I don't even know how audiences are going to react. I mean, I left a screening of The Flash a few weeks ago, and people were applauding. This is like, people had such a great time. The Flash freaking bombs. I'm like, okay, I have no, like, I clearly am not. We went to a screening of Dead Reckoning just now, part one, and I think the audience had a good time. That's what I would say. They had a good time. They applauded at some places. They laughed at the right places. But I don't know, man. It's a long movie, and a lot of it is not fun, I would say. So, yeah, that's kind of my initial reaction. Joy, what did you think?
I think I'm not as hard on it as you are. The movie's tone in the first half hour, especially, is extremely meta and irreverent. It is commenting on the fact that here we are again with this same person who seems to have a pattern of behavior. You know, like, it's been referenced before, like Henry Cavill gives a speech about it in Fallout, but it is taken to, I think, a much more humorous extreme in this. And that kind of lightheartedness, for me, means the whole thing feels like, if you were to just take it as a pleasant sit, I actually think it with some really breathtaking action, I think it absolutely clears that bar.
Mm-hmm.
It is not like a nonstop thrill ride that you cannot believe you're seeing for every moment of it. And there's strangely like repetitive exposition that feels like pretty heavy for stuff that doesn't even make a ton of sense. I would say this made less sense from a plot perspective than
virtually any of the other
I
movies.
Agree.
Yeah. Other than two, like this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, but
makes...
in two, you get it. There's like a virus and there's an antidote. You know, like it's pretty straightforward.
I guess.
You know, so it does a real disservice. I think there's a very complicated mechanism by which we're supposed to understand, you know, like the fate of the world like hinges on this fairly complicated multi-step process. Because it's only part one, we're only going to get through part of the process. And then maybe because it's so complicated, it feels like several times people have to really bog it all down by saying like, okay, here's where we are. We have to do the thing. And just as a reminder, this is the thing. And if you get the thing, then this is what's going to happen. Yeah. But if you get the thing, this other bad thing is going to happen. And then I would say the nature of the thing itself, it's always like some sort of like weapon or threat to humanity or whatever, itself has like certain qualities and characteristics that are very, despite all that exposition, very poorly described. So my suggestion is just don't pay attention. Like if somebody starts to exposition, like go refill your popcorn, go to the bathroom. You're missing absolutely nothing because the stakes make actually no sense. You get it. The stakes are high. It's fine. You know, like,
yeah.
Let's get to the fighting already.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the things that Joy is describing are the things that that kind of turned me off to the movie a little bit, you know, and I have avoided trailers for this movie for years now, years. And so the first thing I did when I came home.
Do you hear that note of the sacrifice?
Yeah. So I came home. The first thing I did after I came home was watch the trailers for the movie. They are awesome. I'm really glad I didn't watch them because there's tons of cool moments in the movie that the trailers give away. But one thing that's notable to me about the trailers is they don't explain what the plot of the movie is. And I think the reason, like maybe there's going to be between after we record this and the movie comes out, maybe there's going to be one other trailer that comes out. That's possible because the movie doesn't come out for another couple weeks. I think they have avoided the plot because it's too complicated. Like, it's too complicated to explain.
It ties together like four threads that have all been in the news in the past month, which is like very bizarre.
That is amazing, yeah. But anyway, it is extremely complicated. And honestly, I think more complicated than it needs to be. Like, most of the Mission Impossible movies have been go to the place and do the thing. Like, get the thing or capture the person and do the, you know, like, that's been what most of the Mission Impossible movies, and this one is more complicated than that, and it doesn't really justify that, in my opinion. So, anyway.
I think there are some unevennesses that I suspect are due to cast availability. I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt. Go ahead.
But one of the things that I think is quite fun about this movie is it feels a little bit like a love letter to the franchise itself.
That's true.
So the part where it's sort of tongue in cheek is part of that love letter, but also we see people again, most notably Kittredge, who is in the trailers.
Yeah.
And you get a sense of sort of like more of a through story than you have in prior installments. I think also, you know, there are like lines or callbacks, individual scenes or moments feel like callbacks. Some of them are in the trailer. Like in the trailer, the team is like in a boat in Venice on the canals, and it feels like a reference to the boat scene from The Seine.
Yeah,
in Fallout that was kind of shot from the same angle, and so there are a lot of like little things, little phrases.
Also, they were in, they might have been in Venice in Mission Impossible 3 as well, on a boat after the Vatican sequence. I don't recall exactly but it's very similar.
But the Vatican's not in Venice.
Okay, well, I don't know where the Vatican is. So that's my big problem.
Vatican City is in Rome.
Yeah, there you go. That would explain.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway.
Side note, let's go to Italy.
Yeah, I need to know where things are laid out.
It will disambiguate all of this for you.
I think that's another one of the problems of the movie is if you look at the poster of the movie, it's like, look at the poster, not the one where he's jumping off the cliff, but the one where it's like the faces. And it's like, that's a lot of characters. That's a lot of characters. And it's like, wow, like that's they have introduced, I think, no fewer than six major characters in this film.
I actually liked the company of almost every one of the characters, but I found it quite dizzying that some of them had duplicative purposes.
Yeah, there's no reason, like, at least a quarter to a third of these characters didn't even serve like a particularly useful plot function. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like,
well, there's one where literally there's a duo where one could suffice. There's actually a couple times that happens, and I think it's just for people to have a way to talk to each other and have more exposition occur.
I'm really down on the movie, but in fact, like, you know, overall it's quite enjoyable. I just think this franchise has had such high highs.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible 6, 1, 4, 5, you know, like, there's just so many, like, those are all great action films, in my opinion, and, or spy thrillers, or whatever you want to call them, and this
one. I think this is better than 5.
This one, there's just so many kind of caveats that I need to add to it, and
Like, some of the stuff we're saying that it's got, like, a kind of a hokey overly
yeah.
complicated plot where with a little too much exposition. Like, I think that's true of most of the films. I think there is something about this film that feels reverse engineered from either stunts they wanted to do or people's availability yeah. or we already shot this and it worked. So like this other thing now doesn't work. So we're just going to like build something to bridge it. Like yeah. I think it feels a little patchy, but each patch is fine. They yeah. just don't all
they don't
add up
all
to feeling like
super well, yeah.
they were all meant for the same movie. It's yeah. kind of like when you go to a house that's been added on to in yeah. pieces over the decades. Yeah. Like no part of it is bad though. It just doesn't feel like a unified idea. My probably biggest example of that is there's an opening third, you know, sometime in the opening third, something happens that's in the desert. It's shown in the trailers yeah. extensively. I don't know what that was about other than being beautiful.
Right.
To look at. And I think there are a number
like,
of things.
What was the point? What was the point
what,
of that?
Why?
Why
did
was
we
that
go there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah. Anyway, so I will say this. I thought the movie was very funny. Like, it was very, there was a lot of good humor. As you mentioned, like, the movie kind of makes fun of itself and of the franchise, and it's very
yeah,
self-aware.
The humor works yeah. for me. Like, sometimes Simon Pegg has been a lot of comic relief in prior
yeah.
Installments in ways that felt a little like a shtick that got a little old for me, you know, or there was an awful lot of it. But this was, you know, I thought it was more woven through, and there were many sort of like physical jokes as well as like commentary jokes.
Yeah. And I also give a shout out to the music. Lauren Bolf is, in my opinion, has done the best Mission Impossible score with Fallout. Probably the only one that comes close is Michael Giacchino's work in... I think he did both 3 and 4. You know, Michael Giacchino comes close in my opinion, but Lauren Bolf is so awesome. And every Mission Impossible movie has had a different version of the theme song. And I was really jazzed to hear what this version would be. And it delivered. It was awesome. It was like very different than Fallout. And I had a great time with it. And the music overall is really great. So
I have two meta points as well.
Yeah.
If you
go ahead.
Well, the first is I think this is a perfectly acceptable part one. There is no reason you need to wait to like watch part one and two together. I don't think there's going to be so much continuity that you can't follow. Like it,
yeah.
As a part one goes, it is A, we were all fairly warned, and B, yes. within the narrative itself, they describe it in such a way that you can tell almost from the beginning, like where this thing's going to end, you know, yeah, like I said, yeah. it's a complicated multi-step thing. So it's pretty clear which step
right,
we're going to get to.
Right.
So, okay, excellent. And I thought they were very fair with the audience to not make it feel like half an idea.
Absolutely. I think between the three part ones we've watched this summer, of which you've only seen two, right?
Yeah.
Fast 10, Spider-Verse, and this movie. This is the one that feels like the most like a complete idea.
Yeah. So don't, yeah. I don't think anyone needs to feel like they have yeah. to wait, you know, for another year or whatever, how long it's going to be.
Agreed.
The other thing is we saw it in, I would say, a standard format in a not particularly huge theater because that was the screening
that was what
we
was
were
available to us.
Fortunately yeah. invited to, but I will watch it again in IMAX.
Okay. I'm willing to go see it again in IMAX, but...
Are you not... Wow. I mean, I thought you would be right there with me.
I'm happy Oppenheimer's getting the screens, baby.
Oh,
I know.
Shots
fired. I mean, yeah. I'm not, like, crushed or anything like that. It wasn't like that was terrible or anything, but it was... I am disappointed. You know, I didn't think it was great. And...
Well, I think you probably expected it to be great because it's Macquarie again.
Yes, it's Macquarie again. It's the third one he's done.
Yeah.
I felt like he should have been, you know, he's gotten better every single time, and I thought this would continue that trend. I don't think it has. But he had a lot of difficulties to deal with, like a massive production, starting and stopping, hugely ambitious set pieces, COVID, you know, COVID getting in the way. Like, I understand why it was difficult, but like the final product is... let me put it this way. I'm not going to go see it 5 times. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think like Fallout, it was like, oh, that movie just thrilled me so much.
Or even Top Gun Maverick, I think.
Top Gun Maverick saw 3 times in theaters.
Oh, I thought you saw 4.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This one, I'll see it again in IMAX, but like that's it. Like, I can't imagine myself going back again after that. Like, it's...
But there's something about Maverick that's like so satisfying.
Yeah.
on kind of multiple levels, you know, like an emotional level and like an aesthetic level and an action level, that immediately after watching it, you feel like it's both a complete thought and you would love to revisit that whole journey.
Yeah.
To like admire it with from more angles almost.
Yeah.
I think this really kind of can be admired from the one angle.
I can admire it in my memory. I don't need to see it again.
Well, I do think it will look better on the bigger screen.
I will say this one last thing, and I'll try to be as vague as humanly possible here, but like the movie introduces a ton of new characters. It also brings back a bunch of beloved characters. And I am not happy with how all of those characters are treated. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So,
I'm not 100% sure what you're talking about. Well, I'll look forward to
good,
hearing.
Yeah, good, good. But yeah, I'm not a fan of, like, I think McQuarrie is a skilled enough screenwriter that he understands, and he co-wrote this, he understands that he needs to give every character an arc, which is really freaking hard to do with this many characters, but he like tries to give every character an arc. And I will say some of the arcs are better than others, and some of them are actually pretty shitty. And I wasn't happy with how the movie treated some of the characters. And that is all I can say without saying anything else. So,
okay, I've gotten to where you are. Yeah, okay. I know what you're talking about now.
Yep. Okay. And on that note, I hope this has been enjoyable for you to listen to us kind of struggle through this. But yeah, it's certainly a movie that I think if you're a fan of the Mission Impossible, like definitely go see it. Don't, you know, don't avoid it or anything, but, I do think that the reviews out of the premiere date were like pretty rapturous. And then, you know, if my expectations had been better calibrated, I think I might have enjoyed myself a little more, you know? So.
Well, if you hadn't had, I feel like if you'd been flown to Rome for free, you might have felt a little differently.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of those people, I don't know what the financial arrangements were, but, you know, I'm sure it was a thrill to be at the premiere. And I think they also screened the movie separately too. So like that's where we're reading a bunch of the reactions.
Yeah, that's fair.
But anyway, thanks so much for being a supporter at patreon.com/DaveChen. I'm publishing a lot of video content these days on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok, and it's because of supporters such as yourself. That's why I can do that. So I hope you've been enjoying that content, but also that you're enjoying these little bonus things that I try to do at least once a week. So thanks so much. Thank you, Joy, for the chat.
Arrivederci.